Now we want to spend this retreat focusing our mind on the teaching in Mahasatipatthana Sutta. As I mentioned yesterday, or this morning, this morning, Mahasatipatthana Sutta is the complete discourse that Buddha has given us for our meditation. It's a very long discourse. Sometimes, lately some individuals began to question the authenticity of this discourse. Some say that this is added on discourse. Buddha has not delivered Mahasatipatthana in the way that we find it today. Because it's quite long and it's complete. Many lot of information on Dhamma is given in this discourse. And also this is the discourse that teaches us to gain both concentration and insight. When we look at the discourse very closely, we can see it's a completeness. It's a complete discourse that shows both mindfulness and concentration. And that is why these discourses are called suttas in Pali, sutra in Sanskrit. Sutta in Pali means sometimes it is explained as, since it is it has a very consistent message, people say the meaning of the word sutta is suture, the thread that connects things very neatly. But when we look at the discourses even more closely, you can see the meaning is little different. In Sanskrit and Pali, Utta means said. We say in Sinhalese, Purvokta, said before. Utta in Sanskrit, said before. Utta in Pali is the same meaning. In Khuddaka Nikaya there is a small section or book called Iti Uttaka. The discourse meaning is thus said. So Utta means said. Su Utta means well said, well delivered. And that is the meaning of Svakhata. When you say Svakhato Bhagavata Dhammo, Svakhata means well expounded. Akhata, Utta, Ukta means said, Su Ukta means well said, well explained. What is well explained? In this case, meditation. Well said. Nothing is left for somebody to add or subtract. It's a complete. That is why this Mahasatipatthana Sutta is so popularly used for meditation. At the very outset, Buddha gives us a way to practice it. Friends, this is not a discourse to be recited to get blessing. This is the discourse to be memorized and put into practice. And yes, as I mentioned this morning, even when we sit, Buddha has given a way to sit. Ujunkayang panidhaya. Keep the body straight. Because when we keep the body straight, easy to breathe, we can avoid falling asleep, we can get a lot of oxygen into our lungs, and we remain alert, we can be mindful, and we will not develop aches and pains at our back. For all these wonderful benefits, Buddha recommended only one posture. Ujunkayang panidhaya paramukham satyam. Ujunkayang panidhaya. Keeping the body straight, upright. Fukhamulagatova, sunyagarugatova, nisidati pallankam abhujitva. He has recommended only one posture. Pallankam abhujitva means sitting in full lotus posture. Most people cannot do that. Cannot do that because it doesn't come to us naturally. We have to train ourselves. When you sit to meditate, you find a lot of aches and pains. Why is that? Because this is not the way you sit all the time. How many of you sit at home in full lotus? How many of you sit in the office in your full lotus? When you go to a conference and so forth, most of the time we sit on chairs, putting our legs down. And when we come to meditate, once in blue moon, we try to sit on the cushion in full lotus. Can you do that? No. So, this is a matter of training. We have to train ourselves. If we train ourselves, many things we can do that we think we cannot do. So, Buddha asked bhikkhus, go to a fruit of a tree, a solitary place. What is the solitary place? Appasaddani, appani ghosani, vijanavatani, manusarasayakani, patisallani, sarupani. Five qualities. Appasaddani, less sound. Appani ghosani, less voice, ghosa. Vijanavatani, a place where not too many people are around. Not human air. Vijana means without human, vata means air. No humans, human movements. Or movement created by human, air created by human movement. Manusya rahasayakani, to be able to hide away from human beings. Patisallana sarupani, suitable for gaining solitude. With these qualities, Of course, we don't find these qualities all the time, but we can create situations like this. Maybe when we are home, when we go on vacation, take a weekend, go to a certain place, quiet place, to sit. And then, why do we need all this? Because we try to gain composure, mental composure, with all other activities. As you all know, it's not very easy to gain concentration or even mindfulness. And then sit in a posture, if not full lotus, at least half lotus, if that is difficult, in an easy posture, even that is difficult, sit on a chair, and then keep the body straight, upright, and relax, not uptight. And then, Buddha asks us to focus our mind on our breathing. And he said, before that he said, the purpose of our meditation. And that is how he began the discourse. Ekayano ayambhike maggo sattanam visuddhya. Number one purpose. Because there is only one way, only one direct way. There are many ways. They all are not direct ways. What is the direct way? Direct way for achieving five purposes. That is how he began. First he gave the purpose of meditation. Why we meditate? Some people say we meditate to reduce, they call these days very popular term, stress reduction. Meditate for stress reduction. Or meditate to be healthy. Meditate to may look beautiful, handsome. Meditate to sleep well. Meditate to remember things. Meditate as a fashion. To say among friends, when you come to a conversation, you say, well, I do little meditation these days. It has become a fashion. So there are so many superficial purposes. Actually, the Buddha's purpose is much loftier than that. The very lofty purpose. This is not a joke. This is not just a pastime. This is not a picnic. This is a very serious thing. When we make a commitment, when we do something very serious, we have to commit ourselves to do it regularly, consistently, not to please somebody, but to achieve this fivefold purpose. What are the fivefold purpose? First is sattanam visuddhya, for the purification of being. Now this is extremely important. There is this thick book called Visuddhi Magga. The whole book talk about purification, of seven stages of purification. This whole book based on one discourse in Majjhima Nikaya called Ratha Vinita Sutta. And Venerable Buddha Gosa made the, it is big enough for two PhD dissertations or three. In entire this, the book, He explained purification of being, as Buddha has mentioned. Why is that? You remember this very beautiful stanza, I think every Buddhist, even non-Buddhist, know these two stanzas by heart. If, at least in their own languages, if not in Pali. Manu pubbangama dhamma. Manu sekta manumaya manasache paduttena bhasativa karotiva tatona dukkang anneti chakkang vahatopadam. Manu pubbangama dhamma, mind is the forerunner of all the dhammas. Mind is the chief, mind is the master, mind is the maker. If one with impure state of mind thinks, speaks, acts, the results follow that person like the cart wheel that follows the hoofs of the ox that pulls the cart. This simile is a very powerful simile. How many of you have seen bulls pulling cart these days? We have motor vehicles. And therefore we cannot relate the meaning to a motor vehicle. We have to see a bull pulling a cart. The bull pulls the cart not with pleasure, not with joy, not out of choice. He did not choose to pull the cart. He is tied to the yoke. And the cart that he pulls is not empty cart. It is full of merchandise, heavy. The driver sitting in the cart is not a very compassionate, relaxed, mindful person. He is uptight. He wants to deliver merchandise from point A to point B very quickly so that he can make several trips to make more money. So if the bull is little slow, he will whip him, beat him, curse him, kick him. The road that the bull pulls the cart is not a paved road. It is full of puddles, ups, downs, hills, rocks. And so with all these conditions, the bull has to pull the cart. The Buddha said, if we say something with impure state of mind, do something with impure state of mind, think something with impure state of mind, we experience the results of those commitments exactly like this bull pulling the cart. The Buddha said, the results will wheel of the cart will follow the foot of the bull that pulls the cart. But it does not give the full, complete explanation. When we think about the simile, we can see how much pain, how much suffering, how much stress this bull has. Exactly like that, we experience a lot of pain, a lot of problems, not very easy to remove, because we do things with impure state of mind. On the other hand, Buddha said, if we do things with a pure, clear state of mind, clean state of mind, sisans follow us like our own shadow, which even we don't feel, is so light. That is why when somebody attains enlightenment, that person is described as one who has laid down the burden, ohita bharo. Bharo means barrow, weight. Ohita Bhano means laid down the burden. So when we meditate to lay down the burden, not just stress reduction, much more than that. So purification of mind purifies our morality, our doubts, our path, what is the right path, what is the wrong path, my vision and attainment of the vision, what we should do to gain the attain the vision and so forth, all these will purify. Number one is purification of morality. It is very interesting, Buddha said, when we purify morality, we don't have to wish to be free from stress. We don't have to worry about it. We don't have to think. We don't have to wish to be free from remorse. Why? Because it is the nature. Dhammataya sabhikave. Because this is the nature of Dhamma, nature of the truth. When the morality is pure, clean, good, we don't have to worry about stress. Naturally, mind becomes calm, relaxed and peaceful. When the mind is calm, we don't have to wish to feel peaceful. It naturally happens as a result. It's a natural, that's the Dhammata. We know there is a five niyamas, one is called Dhamma niyama. Dhamma niyama. This is the law of Dhamma. Law of Dhamma means when certain causes and conditions come together, results are there. Proportionate to that, correspondent to the causes and conditions. So, that is the nature. Not somebody manipulating, winding and turning and pushing and so forth behind us. The nature of Dhamma is such that when the mind is pure, morality is good, then we feel we are free from remorse, and then we feel peaceful. And Buddha said, when we feel relaxed, peaceful, we don't have to wish to be joy, full of joy. Why? We feel inwardly, we feel confidence, trust, purity, clarity, and we become full of joy. Buddha said, when we are full of joy, we don't have to wish to be happy. It is the nature of joy to bring us happiness. Happiness is not excitement. In the Buddha's teaching, the spiritual happiness is not excitement. It is just the opposite of excitement. When we are excited, what we do? We smile, we become even talkative, we laugh, we kiss, we hug, we sing songs, we run up and down and express our excitement physically and verbally. When spiritually full of joy, we become very calm, relaxed, peaceful, enjoying, experiencing fully, completely this joy within ourselves. Then the mind and body becomes very calm, relaxed, settled. When full of joy, we become happy. When we are happy, mind become even more calm, more relaxed, more peaceful, more settled. Then Buddha said, one who is full of happy does not have to wish to gain concentration. concentration arises naturally, because that is the nature of happiness. When we gain concentration, we don't have to wish to see things exactly as they are, because that is the nature of concentration. Sukhino chittam samadhiyati. Concentrated mind can see things. Samahitam chittam yathabhutam pajanati. Sukhino chittam samadhiyati. Happy state of mind gains concentration, and concentrated mind can see things exactly as they are. Seeing things exactly as they are is the theme or goal of practicing mindfulness, to see things exactly as they are. So what we need to see things exactly as they are two things: mindfulness and concentration. So then when we see things exactly as they are, Buddha said, we don't have to wish to have what is called nibbida. What is nibbida? Nibbida is translated into Sinhalese as kalakirenwa. In English, disenchantment, dispassion. Friends, whether we say it in English or in Sinhalese, the word nibbida, the meaning of nibbida cannot be expressed fully and completely to get the correct meaning. When we use kalakirana, it is very negative. When somebody has lot of problem, sickness, losing jobs, losing money, family problems, quarreling, troubling, and so forth and so on, finally person says, mata jeevite kala epavela, mama kala kirila. For that meaning they use the word nibbida. In Pali, nibbida doesn't mean that. Nibbida means, you see, when you see, when nibbida arises, we have good morality, relaxed, peaceful state of mind, joy, happiness, concentration, and see things exactly as they are. Do you think when we follow these steps, we would have that kind of kalakirana? When we follow these steps and see what those steps do, we gain nibbida. What is that nibbida? That nibbida is mature, insightful, wise, deep, profound understanding of the nature of life. Nature of life. The state that leads to liberation from suffering. And therefore that has a very profound spiritual, deep meaning. Then Buddha said, we don't have to wish for that, because the previous condition naturally aroused this state of mind. Then there arises, Buddha said, one who has nibbida does not have to wish to have viraga. Viraga. Nibbida, viraga. What is viraga? Viraga is, raga means two things. One is color, other is gluing, glue to something. Glue is raga. Viraga means no gluing. Glue dries up. That means mind cannot cling to things. It happens naturally. When we see things, and when Nibbida arises, seeing things very clearly, the tendency for clinging slowly fades away. The mind becomes, mind is getting free from clinging, craving, attachment. See how far we can go when we purify our mind. Then cessation, viraga, nirodha. Nirodha means cessation. Cessation has two types. One is nirodha, uppada nirodha, other is anuppada nirodha. Uppada nirodha means cessation and arising, ceases and arises. That's what we see when we meditate. We can see something arising, passing away, and some again arising. Momentarily it ceases, and then momentarily something arises. That's called uppada nirodha. O uppada vaya. Uppada dhamma, vaya dhamma. Arising and passing away, arising and passing away. Every time passing away something, we say ceasing, not existing anymore. Anuppada nirodha means nibbana. Cessation for never to arise again. Then, when this cessation takes place, there arises a state of mind, nissarana. Nissarana means what is ceased, let it be ceased forever. No more inviting that again. And therefore, the first purpose of mindfulness is a purification of mind. Sattanam visuddhya. See, even this alone shows us how profound this discourse is. Even this one purpose. Second purpose, soka pariddhavanam samatikkamaya. To overcome sorrow and lamentation. How sorrow and lamentation arises? That sorrow and lamentation arises from greed, desire. Why we cry when somebody passes away? Some people say we cry when somebody passes away because of anger. Not because of anger. Who anger with whom? When we lose something, we cry. Why? Because of attachment, clinging, craving, desire. Tanna jati soko, tanna jati bhayam. Tanna jati soko, soko pariddhavanam samatikkamaya. In order to overcome sorrow, lamentation. Sorrow arises from desire, greed. We meditate to reduce our greed, not to increase it. We cannot reduce our greed very quickly. People always ask, how can we live without desire? Naturally, desire keeps us alive. We desire for this, desire for that, and that keeps us alive. So, we say that the desire also has two aspects, wholesome desire and unwholesome desire. Unwholesome desire is a desire to perpetuate desire, increase desire. Wholesome desire is desire to be desireless. That is a kind of desire. But desire, that desire reduces our desire. We desire to get rid of this desire because it is this desire that brings us sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief and despair. So we meditate for that. Every time we meditate, we chip off very tiny little bit of our desire. We cannot destroy our desire in one session of meditation. No way. Or one retreat. We have to work very hard for long period of time with dedication, devotion, commitment to reduce some amount of desire. And the third purpose is to overcome pain and suffering. Pain continues to exist. Suffering we can overcome. Even enlightened persons like Buddha, Arahant and so forth had pain, although they have overcome their suffering. So suffering you can overcome, pain will continue to exist. But pain will not make them full of stress. Why? They understand the nature of pain. They understand this is some temporary experience. This is not something permanent. But the suffering is perpetual. What is suffering? Suffering is insatiability of desire. Insatiability of desire is called suffering. That means desire can never be satisfied. We try all kind of things to make us happy, to satisfy ourselves. After doing many things, we stop and ask, am I happy? Answer will come, not yet. And do something more. And then after a few years, stop and ask, am I happy? Not yet. I remember, one woman told me, Bhante, Buddha spent 6 years practicing self-mortification to understand suffering. I understood suffering 6 days after my marriage. That is how she understood suffering. So simple and easy. Another man said to me, Bhante, I married 6 times. That is not actually unusual. Just recently I was in Brazil this February and somebody told me there is a man who is 110 years old, married 10 times, have 40 children, 4 from each woman. And he remembers the name of all these 40 children. And he has great, 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 great grandchildren, 300 somewhat. And therefore marrying 6 times is not unusual for some people. So this man said to me, one day I married 6 times. First time, I became very impatient. My wife got very upset, she divorced me. Second time, she became impatient, I divorced her. Third time, she found me to be unfaithful, so she divorced me. Fourth time, I found her to be unfaithful, so I divorced her. Fifth time, I get angry. For any time little thing, I get angry. So she could not bear up, she divorced me. Sixth time, I found her to be angry. So I divorced her. I am going to Bhante, I am going to marry her. This time, a perfect woman. I never found him again. I don't know whether he found that perfect woman or not. So, I am just telling you this example. The amount of things we do to make us happy. We marry to become happy and divorce to become happy. Right? And then remarry again to become happy and divorce again to become happy. Friends, no matter how many wrong things you do to make you happy, you will never be happy until you do the right thing. Right thing is not trying to please your craving. Right thing is not to please the craving. Throw the whole bundle away. Because you can never satisfy craving. Suffering is that. Insatiability of desire. Craving can never be satisfied. And Buddha said, na kahapana vasena thitti kame sivijyati appasada dukha kama iti vinyaya pandito api dibbesu kamesu satinso nadigachati. Tannaka jiro nibbana seva santike. Suppose, just to give the summary of the whole Pali stanzas, instead of explaining the meaning, when you get the meaning of the simile that I'm going to tell you, it would be easy to understand. Suppose you have a huge house, maybe as big as this whole compound, big house. One fine morning you wake up and you see the entire house is full of gold, because that night there was a rain. And fortunately there was a leak of your roof. And this rain was gold. Every drop of this rain was gold. So that gold fell into your house, and your house is completely full of gold, from basement to the roof. Every nook and corner is covered with gold. When you see this gold is, you cannot use in your life, you cannot use even in 10 lives, not even 100 lives, you cannot finish using this gold. So much gold. But when you wake up in the morning, seeing all this gold, you would think or say, gee, how nice if I had a bigger house. Right? You never think, gee, how can I use this much gold? What is the use of this much gold? You never say that. You say, how nice if I had a bigger house. You see? That is the nature of desire. And therefore, since you can never satisfy desire, Buddha called it suffering. Therefore, suffering is not just little stress. You know, temporary stress that can be curable. Suffering is much, much deeper. It exists not only in one life. We have been suffering in this samsara from time immemorial. We even don't know when it started. We have been suffering. Life after life, life after life, life after life. Why? because of this desire. Friends, we meditate, see the our lofty goal of our meditation, we meditate to reduce this suffering, to reduce this greed that causes us suffering life after life. Dukkha domana saranangattama nyaya sadhigamaya. We meditate to fold ourselves into the right path. Nyaya means method, system. We are not practicing out of the system. Sometimes people say, I don't care for Buddhism, I don't care no political path, I just want to practice meditation. I just want to practice vipassana. I don't have to do anything. It has nothing to do with Buddhism, Noble Eightfold Path. I simply want to practice vipassana. That is not the purpose Buddha has given in the discourse. Nyaya sadhigamaya. To realize this system. What is the system? The Noble Eightfold Path. That is the system. When we practice meditation, what do we realize? We realize, we understand, we see the Buddha's very perfectly well planned for us, like an architect. You know, architects are not the builders. They draw plans. When they draw the plan, they know entire house is in their mind. They know, if you give, I need a house of this size, he would ask, how much you want to spend? How much you like to spend? This much. Okay. He draw the plan. Every nail, every screw, every hinge, every door, every window, every tile, every beam, everything is in his mind. In the detailed plan, you can see the entire house. The builders are not the architect. They follow the plan. They follow the plan. When they follow the plan, they build the house according to your wish. Similarly, Buddha gave us a plan. He's a wonderful architect. When we practice meditation, then only we begin to see the plan. Then we follow the plan, step by step. This is called Nyaya Sadhigamaya. To realize the path, to liberate ourselves from samsara, we meditate. Then Nibbanasya Satchikiriyaya. What is this plan for? To realize Nibbana. These are the fivefold purposes of our meditation. Therefore, friends, every time we sit to meditate, we may feel a little intimidated by looking at the goal. We feel a little intimidated because it appears to be unachievable. But friends, any apparently unachievable thing can be achieved by practicing it. When we explain these things, when we talk about meditation, people say it is easier done. Easier said than done. But I turn around and tell them it is easier done than said, if you do it. For instance, if you try to teach me how to swim, you will break your neck. You cannot make me swim. Why? I cannot swim. Then you jump into water and swim and show me, Pante, this is how we swim. Which is easier? to teach me how to swim or to swim? Swimming is easy for you because you have done it. You swam it. You experience it. Similarly, when you practice, every moment you practice meditation, it becomes easier. Try that. As I said, when you try to sit on a cushion on the floor for the first time, see how difficult it is. But if you keep sitting again and again and again, see how easy it becomes. Similarly, purification of mind is not difficult. Overcoming sorrow is lamentation is not difficult. Overcoming pain and suffering is not difficult. Treading the path of Noble Eightfold Path is not difficult. Even attaining enlightenment is not difficult if you practice it. Even in this very life, Pachattang Veditabha Dhamma Sandhittika Eipasika Openaika Nature of the Dhamma, we can see. We can see this is practical, this achievable, this I can do. With this commitment, we practice. We start with the Mahasatipatthana Sutta. I request you all, if you have not read the Sutta, read it. Preferably in Pali. I don't know how many of you like to read in Pali. At least read in the language you are comfortable with, whatever language, because it has been translated into many languages. Read it. So, with this, I like to stop the talk. This is just an introduction to this discourse, this meditation practice, and I anticipate giving a talk every day at this time, trying to elucidate the meaning of Mahasatipatthana Sutta and try to bring out practical aspect, not just mere theory. The Sutta is practical and we can see how we can practice it in our daily life if we make a very sincere, honest commitment. We can practice it.